right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started here, and it's going to go pretty quick. We're just going to do 1 hour today, so it looks like we have a lot of questions on deck already. You could always try to press one. We might go through these quick and get to some more. We're going to get started here. Just give me a couple minutes.
Your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, the list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, we'll tackle it here on the show. And these weeknight shows are short, so we're just going to jump right into some questions tonight. I'm going to start off in Texas. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for you. Is the heavy-use vehicle tax tax-deductible?
It is. So it's
okay.
Always in the whatever year you pay it, it doesn't matter what we're paying for because it runs, you know, from the middle of the year to the middle of the year. But whatever amount you paid during that calendar tax year is what's deductible.
Okay. And then on some of my settlements, I've had like December fuel tax, you know, November fuel tax. I've had ad valorem tax. I think it's all tied into the fuel and mileage. And also had like a mileage tax. Is that tax deductible?
It is. All the taxes you pay that would come out of a settlement. So you could have mileage taxes, fuel taxes, ad valorem taxes. Those are all deductible.
Excellent. That's what I needed to know. Thanks for your time and your help as always.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Good question. Let's head off to Kentucky. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call.
What can I help you with today?
Yes. I hope you're going to be able to help me with, I have a problem with brokers. I am a one-man company, so I do it all. And I have a problem with brokers. What happens to me is that they always cancel a load on me, or when I get to the shipper, there's no load actually, or somebody else took it. And they offer me a truck order not used for like $150. But if it happens to me on Saturday or on Friday, I'm stuck for the weekend without work. And it happens to me, like, all the time. And I know you talk about, building a relationship with brokers. But I've been in business for 1 year, and I don't see that. I only see that they only take advantage of us. And then they are over there to screw us.
No, they're not. They're really not. That's not their mission in life. Their mission in life is the same as yours. They want to make money. They're just in business to make money. Now, that doesn't mean that some of them aren't just lousy to do business with. I get that. There's bad brokers. But do you think there are bad owner-operators who book a load and then never show up?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So it's not that brokers are bad or brokers are out to screw you, necessarily bad and out to screw you. But some people are just much better at business than others. And when I say build a relationship, that doesn't mean you can just pick up the phone, call somebody one time, and then that's going to be where how you build the relationship. You have to be picky. There are lots of people I come in contact with in business, and once I learn about them, I choose not to do business with them. There are lots of shops that I couldn't build a relationship with if I tried, because I don't want a relationship. So the hard work is finding the people who you want to partner with. You know, over the years, we've had companies that we've partnered with that I've had to get rid of. I've had to part ways because they didn't live up to their part of the transaction. And that's just part of the hard work, is finding them, screening them, sometimes making that tough decision that you're not going to do business with them anymore. You can't control what somebody else does. You can't make the brokers be different. You have to find the brokers who are different, who are, because if you're saying every broker you're working with is just out to screw you, well, then you're just working with the wrong brokers, because there are really good ones out there.
I've been in business for a year, and I have never came across not even one.
Well, a year isn't very long. You know, when I talk about building relationships, some of my relationships in this industry are 25 years. So a year is, you're just getting started. My first year in Orlando, when I moved my trucks to Orlando, well, first I moved to Jacksonville. I spent a year in Jacksonville and never found a shop that I really wanted to build a relationship with. Just didn't find them in a year. I moved to Orlando, and it took me about a year and a half before I started building good relationships there. And when I left there 14 years later, I had excellent relationships. Now, the fact that it's been a whole year and you haven't found one broker that isn't out to screw you, I have a feeling that's what you're looking for. We will find exactly what we look for. There are bad things that can happen every day, and there are good things that can happen every day. People who look for the bad every single day, and guess what? They find it. But I wake up every day, and I just know something good is going to happen. And it does, every time. So there are good brokers. I swear to you, there are tens of thousands of them that are good at what they do, and they are not out to screw you. They're just out to make money. And in order to really be successful, they need good carriers. So a good broker would never screw their carriers. That's just lousy business.
Well, you know, so how would you solve
this
problem?
Let me ask you one more question. How much have you studied, whether through books or seminars or audio or any means possible, how much have you studied negotiation?
I'll be honest, not that much. No, maybe
so here's,
half a
here's
year.
Part of the reason, here's part of the reason why owner-operators feel like they get screwed when they work with a broker. How many loads do you book a week on average?
About three.
They do that every 10 minutes. That's what a broker does. They book loads that they sell and negotiate all day long, because first they have to go to a shipper and they have to negotiate to get those loads. Then once they have the loads in their system, they spend all day negotiating to move those loads. They do three every 10 minutes some days. You do three a week. Who do you think is better at negotiating?
Of course they are, but I have a different problem. I don't have a problem so much negotiating with the brokers. I have a problem where I show up,
that's what you're missing. Negotiation isn't just about price. Negotiation is about the whole transaction, the relationship, the deal. If I am good at negotiating with the brokers that I work with and I build a relationship, those loads won't keep getting canceled. Somebody on the other end could care less what load you're getting. You're getting the worst of their loads, and that's part of the negotiation. Not just getting the best price, But getting shippers that don't cancel and loads that are more stable and better communication with the broker, and it's much more in-depth than, well, I called and I got the price I wanted. Well, it's no good to get the price if you never moved the load.
I don't really, you know, have a problem with negotiating about price or about anything else. I just have a problem when I show up at the shipper, and then I came to find out that the truck already left, and the broker says that they didn't even know it.
I'm hearing that. And what I'm telling you is if you take the time, I get it. We've outlined the problem clearly. I'm trying to get you to a solution. The solution is you have to find better brokers. Well, then you should just sell your truck and get out of the business now, because what else are you going to do?
Well, if it's going to keep going like this, that I'll be stuck for the weekend without work, then I'll probably will run into the issue where I'm not going to make enough money to pay my bills.
So that doesn't sound like a good solution. So why aren't you willing to try mine?
I'm willing to try it, yes, and I do it all the time.
Well, but you're
like
already
say,
going into it with a bad attitude. Remember what I said? Some people look for what's wrong, and they find it. And some people look for what's right, and they find it. But what you just said after I gave you that solution is, I don't think it's going to work. I can promise you right now, it's not going to work. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Roth. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. You know, there's a quote, "Can ye shall find." That is so absolutely true. If you are looking for it, you will find it. And the last caller was looking for what was wrong. And when I gave him a solution, he said, it's not going to work. And he is 100% correct. It's not going to work. Let's go to Alabama. Justin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Quick question. Just installed OPS, switched over to a synthetical 5W40 synthetic, full synthetic, and now I'm using oil at the rate of 1 gallon every 5,000 miles. I wasn't using any in 15,000 miles before. So I know some of that's usual. How long can I expect that to continue, or will it ever stop?
90% of the time it will slow down gradually, and you'll get back to never back to where you were before, because this is a lighter, thinner oil. But you should get back to where you're burning a gallon every 10 or 12. Which isn't a bad thing, because then, especially with the OPS, we're going to do really long extended drains, and that occasional gallon every 10,000 miles or so keeps everything fresh and keeps the base up. Now, you made two changes here from a mineral base to a synthetic, and that will increase oil consumption, and from a 15 weight to a 5 weight. The 5 weights are pretty new. We're still learning a lot about those. So I'm not surprised. But you should see this slow down, and you'll get back to about a gallon every 10 or so.
Okay. I guess the parts I thought was kind of peculiar was the first 5,000, I didn't burn any. And then, so I got 15,000 on the oil now, and I've had to add 2 gallons, but it didn't start until...
Yeah, I've seen just oddball stuff like that happen, and it may change over time, but I wouldn't worry about it right now. Keep running it, see what happens.
Okay. And how many miles do you think we ought to go just to test this out? I mean, within 20,000 additional miles, I ought to know something, you think, or it ought to slow down?
You know, I've seen I've seen it slow down progressively over as much as 100,000 miles.
Okay. All right. Let's
so, you know, you might start burning a gallon at 6,000 or 7,000, and then maybe after that 7,500 or 8,000, and over time it usually gets better. Not always. Every now and then we see an engine that just, for whatever reason, the rings will not reseat to the lighter weight oil. And then you just decide, are you okay putting in a gallon every 5,000? If you do with the EcoPure, you'll probably never change your oil. You'll be putting in enough fresh oil, which that isn't a bad thing either. Let's go to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Just the previous caller about the brokers, he needs to understand the market from a lot of people, process, and product. You got to follow the process. I tell people every day about that. You got to go slow and arrive at your deliveries on time, and eventually, you know, you just got to follow the process. So hopefully he'll figure that out on his own.
Yeah, you know, the reason I use the phrase do the hard work is try to distinguish that from working hard. Lots and lots of people work hard and get nowhere. Doing the hard work is what most people won't do. Most people won't go through 50 brokers looking for the one that they can build a relationship with, and then when they find them, do the work to build the relationship. It's not a matter of, well, I called that guy 3 times and he's still screwing me. Well, of course he is. That's what everybody does. How about taking some time, if you think you have a broker that's worth dealing with, and they're out there, lots of them. How about taking the time to go physically visit him wherever he is? Go to his office, take him out to lunch, actually sit down face to face and tell him what you're trying to accomplish. That's a lot of work, but that's the
Absolutely.
Hard work that most people won't go do.
Yeah, Bob, exactly. I have a question. I am looking to keep my truck for at least 5 more years. It's an emission truck, 2010 Freightliner Cascadia. Never had a problem with it. I'm prepared to eliminate the problem if it arises with emissions, but I'm trying to just clean the system out and make it last longer. And one of the things I want to do is just upgrade the interior by, you know, pulling everything out and redoing the sound deadening material, because really this first-generation Cascadia doesn't have much on it. And I was wondering if you had
okay.
any experience with hush mat or any other ideas I can do, because I want to completely going crazy on the insulation. I won't be able to hear my heartbeat while I'm going down the road. But I have a follow-up text question, too.
Okay. So the hush mat, any of those sound barrier products, I haven't tested them one against another, but I can tell you that anything you put in there makes a huge difference. And if you're using a product that's designed for that, you are going to notice a significant difference in sound.
Okay, I bought some insulation that was kind of like a bubble wrap with a heat shield on both sides for $15 for like 33 square feet. I'm actually going to put
yeah.
that down and borrow my friend's FLIR infrared camera to see the difference in temperature to kind of test that out before I spend $500 on the hush mat. And I have a question. I do Uber once in a while because I live in Austin, Texas, and I leave my truck about 100 miles away. So on the way to picking up my truck on the weekend or for the week, I pick up Uber on the way up to where I pick up my truck, which is roughly about 100 miles. And I might just pick up one person on the way to the truck and make $10. But as long as I'm doing it all the way to where I get to my truck, can I technically write off all those miles since I'm Ubering or doing whatever?
Yes. Now, let me just explain my answer, because nowhere in the IRS code does it address some of the things that we're starting to do these days, Uber being one
exactly.
of them, Airbnb. You know, these are things. Now, you collect your money from where? Well, how do you get paid?
They pay me direct deposit, and they issue me a 1099
Uber.
Uber does,
right. Yeah, so, you know, they've done a pretty good job of documenting the income, so you will pay tax on the income. On the other hand, you know, nowhere in the code can I find where it says, okay, have to put somebody in the car through the, you know, it's just not there. We have to determine. Yeah, I would write off all those miles. That would be my answer.
And what I do is, luckily for me, I have a galley plug leak. I'm losing about a gallon of oil every week until I can get it repaired next month. So what I do is, on the way to picking up my truck, I intentionally stop at Walmart to pick up 1 gallon of oil once a week to have that as a receipt. And I also take my car to pick up stuff when I'm out of hours. So I say, well, I can't take my truck, I'm out of hours, but I can hop in my car, because I could probably theoretically write off as much as 30,000 miles, and I think it's at 57 cents a mile. That's a pretty good write-off. So
that is. That's significant, and I would not have a problem defending that. So I would say yes, take those.
I'm going to switch to your tax service this week. I have ATBS, and I got a lot of back taxes I need to work on, and I have a lot of gray areas. I'm a big procrastinator. You've gotten me to get good on everything else except for the procrastinating, so that's my last thing I need to work on my business model. But it's been a great year, and like I said, I like doing the Uber. It's nice. It's fun. I meet a lot of people, and it's a nice fallback in case my truck breaks down. I can my friends do it. I have one guy that actually works for my company. He broke his leg. So he's been doing it, making almost $1,500 a week part-time, working, you know, works about 60 hours a week, but he works throughout the week. And so I highly recommend it if you have it in your city and you're home a lot. But it's just a wonderful fallback position to be in. You automatically have another job, you know, and like I said, I do it more for the tax benefit than the income. But, hey, I appreciate it.
I think it's a great idea. So, yeah, absolutely. Keep track of the miles. I would deduct them all. And you're right. Nice secondary income. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to take us into a break. And when we get back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. Lots of stuff going on. If you want to stay in touch with what we're doing, you want to get signed up for our newsletter, go to the website. It's letstruck.com. And on the bottom left corner of the homepage, you'll see a sign up for our newsletter. That's just general information. And then depending on what might be going on, there may be other sign-ups you'll see there on the homepage. We have some webinars we are producing now. We have some e-books and audiobooks, some resources for you. Sometimes we even give those away. So check it out. At letstruck.com. Stick around, we'll be right back with more stuff of Kevin Rupp. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to head off to Texas. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. I can barely hear you, though.
Oh, really? Okay. Is that any better?
That's a little better. Try it again.
Okay, how about now?
That's much better. All right, what are we talking about today?
We got a business report for you to look at.
All right, let's take a look here. Wow. Holy cow. You guys had a good year.
Yeah,
really good year. $1.84 a mile on revenue. That's all miles for 2015. That was outstanding. I mean, significantly above average. Your fixed costs are 27 cents a mile. Nothing to get too crazy about there. Let's take a look. Fuel at 29 cents. Good. Maintenance at 26, that's a little high. A lot of upgrades, or?
Yeah, we did a bunch of stuff. We knew we were going to have a good year, so we decided to just do all the big stuff. We got our jakes rebuilt. We replaced our brakes. We got new steer tires. We got a new turbo. We had the bull gear done. So we got a bunch of big, major stuff done this last year.
Got it. And that's a good way to do it. And that's a really good reason for having good accounting and knowing your numbers. You see that it's a good year. That's when you take the cash, you plow it back into the business, which is what you've done. And even with all that, you're still keeping 85 cents a mile. That's profit, which is outstanding. And because you guys are a team, you did a good number of miles, not a tremendous amount of work. It's 205,000 miles. That's, I think, a great number. And the 175,000, that is fantastic.
Yeah, we couldn't be more pleased. That was a dedicated run that we found. Really doing the hard work. I was on the load board for a whole day looking around, see what I could find. We're with Landstar. And I saw this run. And so I jumped on it, and we did that for the entire year. And it was just, you can see how good it was.
Yes, it was. It was really good. So there is good freight out there. There are good agents out there. You've got to find them. And it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would have this. It's not. It's the top 5% that end up with stuff like this. But, it is hard work. But it is so worth it, because if all you do is just work hard and bust your ass every day and you don't get anywhere, it's so much better to go that extra. Do the work that other people aren't willing to do, and you'll get results like this. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. When we first started the dedicated run, actually it was in November of 2014, a lot of people probably would have thought we were stupid. Because in order to get on it, we deadheaded 2,000 miles to get over to the pickup. But I knew it was going to turn out like this, so that's why I was okay with that. So
absolutely. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't be more pleased. Next year is probably going to be a little lower because we're off that run now. But it's still going to be good. There's good stuff over here at Landstar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. I'd love seeing that. All right. Great stuff. Having your numbers is where it starts. Get a good accounting system in place. I just released the free ebook about the 6 mistakes people make when they get started. But it's those same 6 mistakes I see people making 5 years later, 10 years later. Still not doing the hard work, the stuff other people won't do. Getting your accounting done every month on time, going over the numbers until you understand them, looking around, building relationships, trying things, taking some risks. Deadheading 2,000 miles, there was some risk there. But it was a calculated risk, and it really paid off. Let's go to New York. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for the call. I have a 2008 MBE 9000 Columbia Freightliner, and when I got it, we changed the oil at 5,000 miles because it was sitting for 5 years before we picked it up. And then we put the Delvac in it. And then at 15,000 miles later, we happened to be at a place that they use Rotella. So now we're at the 15,000-mile mark, and I have to change the oil. Do I stick with Rotella or go back to Delvac or what?
You know, honestly, I have said this many, many times over the years. I can't tell the difference in most oils. I just can't. I've tried. I've put a lot of time and effort into coming up with ways to test oil to see what brand might be better. I do know that synthetic is better than mineral. We can see it. We can see it in fuel mileage. So we know that synthetic is better. But I've never been able to really say between brands, this one is better than that one, and here's why. I can't say it. It's why we've never partnered with an oil company. We've been approached by almost all of them, and I just have to tell them, look, you're not going to hear me tell people on the air that your oil is better than somebody else's because I can't prove it. And honestly, neither can you. With all the marketing and all the stuff you do, I get it. Of course you want to tell everybody your product's better, but how do we prove it? I mean, I've looked at tens of thousands of oil samples. I can't find a difference.
Okay. So I'll just stick with whatever's on sale at Walmart. All right, next.
Yeah. You know, every now and then we will run into an oil that doesn't seem to work well in a particular engine, but there's no consistency to it. Sometimes a guy will try Rotel and it won't work well for him. He'll burn more oil, his base will disappear quickly, and we switch him to Delvac and it goes away. But the next guy comes along and it was Delvac causing the problems. We switch him to Rotel and everything's fine. But that's pretty rare. Yeah. Most trucks, you put whatever oil in them, as long as it meets the API requirements for your year of engine. That's the one thing you want to make sure of, that it does have the correct API for the year of your engine. And as long as that's okay, the case, odds are it's going to work just fine.
Thank you, Kevin. The other question is on home testing for blood. Are there any home tests you can just like prick your finger and you get results, or you have to always mail things in?
It depends on what you're trying to test for. What do you want to test for?
Cholesterol, sugar. Cholesterol and sugar.
Sugar is easy, really easy. Now, you can't do an A1C at home, but you can do your instant blood glucose readings. The meters are only like $30, and you can pick them up at any drugstore. And the strips are 20 or 30 cents a piece. Yeah, it's the same thing. I've got two of them here on my desk, and I, use them all the time. So blood glucose is easy. And the thing about blood glucose is you can check for a month, and you're still going to notice different patterns. It's not a one-time thing. It's here's what it is when I get up in the morning. You know, here's what it is if I eat late and then get up in the morning. Here's what it is if I have, a tablespoon of honey before I go to bed. Here's what it is an hour after I eat this kind of food. So it's an ongoing thing, and over time you learn how eating in different ways and different foods affects your blood sugar, and that's good information. So that's cheap and easy. There are some machines, some home devices that can do cholesterol. I don't think they're worth buying because cholesterol isn't something that we need to check over and over and over and over, like blood sugar or blood pressure. You know, if you get your cholesterol checked a couple times a year, that's going to be just fine. I have never had my cholesterol checked. I don't know what my numbers are.
All right. Got it, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome. I keep saying I'm going to go in and do some pretty extensive screening since I've been a year now grain-free. I've been a year eating, pretty paleo, part of that, a long part of that, about 10, almost 11 months was fully ketogenic the whole time. Now I've backed off the ketogenic just a little bit, still eating very clean, not eating grains. So I guess I'm curious to see what some of my numbers are, but not curious enough that I've taken the time to go do it yet. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. Kevin Ross. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Illinois. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I've been tracking my fuel mileages for quite a while on a company truck, and they switched from the odometer setting stayed at the 24.5 or 24 low pros. Is what they had on there originally when they bought the truck. The odometer stayed there, but they brought, when I got the truck, it was 22.5 low pros.
Okay.
Now, they just changed tires to 24, or to 22.5 talls, which I understand is a mistake because they're rolling resistant, but they're stubborn headed, and I'm trying to prove them that it doesn't work.
Okay.
Now, with the odometer settings not being changed, I was getting about 5.5, 6 miles to the gallon with the odometer set at 24 with low pros. So that would be better, actually, by my figures. Would I actually be getting better? Or am I confusing you?
No, it would be, that would be false. It would be showing better than the true mileage is, because...
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, the odometer is thinking, the truck thinks you're traveling farther than you really are.
So my fuel mileage would actually be better on the calculations on fuel gauges.
It better than reality, correct. If we were to get the odometer right and then calculate it, the fuel economy you're seeing now would go down.
Okay. Okay. Because right now it dropped down quite a bit. So because the 22.5 talls are the same size as the 24 low pros, correct? Approximately.
Well, yeah, we can make that guess, but honestly, if you want to get accurate, you have to look at every individual tire. Like even
right.
Two tires that are the exact same size will not have the same revolutions per mile. One might be 518 and one might be 514. It's not a huge difference, but it's a difference. If we use the RPM, that is a very, very accurate reading. We can say that sometimes a low pro 24.5 is close to a tall 22.5. But it's still just an approximation. I mean, if we use the tire's RPM, then we're going to be much more accurate. But to answer your question, based on what you told me, the fuel mileage you're recording is higher than it really is if you were to correct the odometer. Let's go to Iowa. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I was wondering, I'm in the process of buying a truck that is technically it's new, but it's a 6-year-old truck that has never been sold. And I was wondering, should a guy worry about the oil on that, or should a guy change it, or what do you think?
Well, so we're talking about a 2010, correct?
2011.
So here's the thing. I could answer the question based on the fact that the truck's been sitting, but my real answer to the question is I just wouldn't buy one of these trucks, period.
Why don't you want it? I already have one.
Yes.
The same truck. That was a good deal on this one, and that's the way I've decided to go.
Well, to answer your question, sitting, I would change the oil. The oil's oxidized, but it's not a big deal. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't scare me to start it up and drive it. I mean, I'd even pull a load with it, but you'd be better off changing the oil. It's going to be oxidized.
So if a guy bobtailed with it, 1,400 miles, heard nothing.
Yeah, no big deal. In fact, if I bought the truck and I wasn't at my shop, my preferred shop at home, then I would bobtail it to get it to my shop rather than let somebody else work on it.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. To Kansas City. Darius, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Two different questions for you. First, as far as the OPS system, I talked to Fitzgerald. I'm looking for a glider about 2 months ago. I drove by there, and I was kind of surprised. The sales guy said that they don't put them on anymore. They would warranty the trucks that they had before with them, but they would not put the OPS on their trucks anymore starting this year. What's the deal with that?
You know, Fitzgerald has grown a lot. So they have a lot of different people down there. And honestly, one of the challenges we've always faced with Fitzgerald, we love the way they build trucks, but we have never seen eye to eye on modification. And that was part of the reason we, you know, looked for other builders. We still send people to Fitzgerald on a standard build, but if anybody wants upgrades, modifications, it was just a constant fight. They just have a very different attitude. They tend to sell a lot of trucks to 25 to 50 truck fleets, and fleets don't like that kind of stuff, too hard to manage with drivers. You know, if you send 50 trucks out on the road and you've got different filters and you got to find shops that know how to do it and the drivers aren't, you know, paying attention, or even something as simple as a fleet air filter. You know, we love those, but fleets have to be really careful, because one of the things that happens if your drivers aren't watching, you pull in to get an oil change and they throw the filter away. They don't, I mean, so a lot of this stuff that we promote, we talk about, we know that it works. You won't see it even on small fleets. It doesn't work nearly as well with a driver who isn't the owner of the truck. And that's part of it that Fitzgerald sells to a lot of those fleets. And the other part is I just think they have a different opinion about, you know, the value of the upgrades.
Okay. No, I was just worried as far as maybe something happened with the, you know, a few trucks but they didn't say anything, so.
You know, here's one of the things that has happened, not just with Fitzgerald or Detroit, but we had this problem with Cummins, and I've talked about this. The older engines, we are putting a lot more pressure on that supply chain, so we were getting rebuilds that were failing. Because they were using block never been rebuilt, they were not within standards, they were mixing and matching parts, they were getting lower quality rebuild parts. We were really stressing that whole supply chain, and everybody wanted to look around and blame the failures on something else. For years, Cummins tried to blame the ISX failures on bypass oil filters, not just the OPS, but any bypass filter. Well, we've proven them wrong so many times. It has nothing to do with the bypass oil filter. It's their engine failing. Some of the rebuilds that have failed has nothing to do with the oil. I mean, we have all the oil history. We can prove there was nothing wrong with the oil. So there has been some talk about, you can't do extended drains. Well, hell, we've been doing extended drains for 25 years successfully. These problems had nothing to do with that. But, you know, sometimes that's what happens.
So it's just a few trucks here and there and due to the builders, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Second question. I've been looking at gliders and slow process, but I'm taking my time. I'm looking at a 2014 Coronado. It's got roughly 300,000. For $80,000, or just going with the brand new one, what would you do in this situation?
You know, a new one's going to cost you $125 probably.
Roughly, yes. Yeah, I'm still kind of deciding between Coronado and actually Western Star.
Yeah, and they're both, I mean, you might pay a little more. So $125 or so, and up, that's $45,000. I would be very tempted to buy the 2014. That's a big saving.
Okay.
You know, think about what you could do with the extra $45,000 as far as upgrades. Sky's the limit. You could do anything you wanted.
Okay. Yeah, I was just, you know, it's going to be out of that $300K warranty and all that, so that's what I was kind of worried about there.
I have a different opinion. I could care less about warranties. Really, we've seen so many problems. I would, $45,000 savings, a truck that is barely broke in, I'd take the extra money and upgrade the hell out of that thing and have a much better truck and still save a lot. I'm all out of time. We'll see you next show. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us today, but we are doing just that 1 hour. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks.